You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. As always, we are absolutely thrilled you're here with us. Thank you so much for all the support and kindness and wonderful, amazing messages you guys are sending us as you're discovering the podcast. It's absolutely heartwarming, and Don and I are just absolutely amazed at the amount of feedback we're getting from you guys, and we're just thrilled you're enjoying the shows. So tonight's show is going to be a good time. I got a great interview with Chad from Atlanta. And he's had a whole lifetime of experiences that he's going to talk to us about. But, you know, before that, we're going to get to an email from another listener named Sharon. But, Don, you know, it seems to me that there's this phenomenon that seems to happen. And it is that once somebody experiences a phenomena, they seem to be more likely to re-experience phenomena after that. Have you noticed that as well throughout the course of this?
Yeah, you know, before I came to the portal, I say I've never really had an experience because I seem to be numb or locked out to them or something like that. But when I listen to all these stories and I listen to the people telling their tales, It just baffles me that once you have one, like you said, you know, once, say, somebody sees a spirit or an apparition, then all of a sudden they start seeing other things as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just mind-boggling to me.
It really is. It makes it, you know, seem like there's some kind of seal that you're popping on this deal or something that's, you know, like something, there's some natural resistance in our lives to this kind of stuff. But once you see one, it's like you broke the seal and now you're going to see all kinds of different things. And I think that phenomena continues to repeat itself. And that seems to be certainly the situation with Chad. But I've heard that so many times come up over and over and over throughout the course of our shows. It's like, well, there's one time I saw a ghost, and then next thing I know, Bigfoot was over near my shed, and then there was a UFO over the field, and it's like this cornucopia just kind of unleashes, right? And people end up experiencing a lot of different things, and it's really common, ladies and gentlemen. As unlikely as that may seem to the person who hasn't experienced anything, it's very common that once you experience one thing, you seem to be prone to experiencing other things. And perhaps there's just an awareness that opens up within us after our first experience that attunes us to this other phenomena that's always been there, but maybe we've just glossed right over it. Because I really believe that we have very selective vision, we have very selective mm-hmm. hearing, yes. we have a very selective attention span based upon the course of our lives. And in Western society especially, we are pushed and pushed and pushed to be efficient, to, you know, 9 to 5, then be responsible, mm-hmm. and, you know, raise your kids and
go faster, do more.
Do more, yeah. with less, and mow your lawn and make sure your house looks nice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we just get ground into this almost numbness. And then something like these events happen, and it's this amazingly profound event. And it's just incredible. So, you know, I just think that's worthy of noting at the first part of this episode. Not that it's particularly only relevant to this episode, but it's just something that I've been thinking about a whole bunch lately, and it seems to continue and continue and continue. So what do you think of all that, Don?
You know, I grew up in Seattle, in the Seattle area, that, you know, that metropolis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would expect to see a spirit, a ghost, something more like that. Of course, you're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see a Bigfoot in the middle of downtown Seattle, or, you know, even in the many, many suburbs and metropolises around that area,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's really, it like I said, it just boggles my mind that this is the way it happens. And it's like, you're right. It's like breaking a seal. Yeah. It's like that seventh seal, and then everything just comes crashing in, and you start having these miraculous and interesting things happen to you.
Right.
So here I am. We'll see what happens.
Well, you have seen something in the skies, though. I mean, you saw the anomalous lights, and I'm not saying
right.
it was UFOs, but it was definitely anomalous. It's something you'd never seen before.
He's air quotes, not saying it's UFOs.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And that was right outside the studio, too.
Yeah.
So
Go figure.
I'm waiting for something else to happen.
You're going to go out to your truck tonight, and this beam of light's going to come, and all of a sudden your truck will be sitting there in the morning. Well, where the hell's Don?
What happened to him now?
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, let's get to this email from Sharon, guys. I read this before, and it's just really an incredible event. Very wild experience she had. So let's go to that. And it says, hey, Brett, I enjoy listening to your show, and it's been especially entertaining here at Halloween time. And thank you. I appreciate that. I hope you enjoy this spooky story from my youth. Well, I grew up in the country, the last house on a dead-end dirt road. The house was surrounded by woods, and as a result of that, it was really quiet and isolated. The house had 6-plus rooms, plus 2 baths, and no hallway. Each room had access to at least 2 other rooms, and the main rooms were like 6 blocks, laid out in 2 rows of 3 rooms with bathrooms tucked in the middle. The layout allowed you to make a circle through the house or a figure 8 pattern if you wanted. The kitchen and living room were on the front side facing the driveway and road coming in, and the 4 bedrooms and baths were on the back side with views of the barn, pastures, and the surrounding hills. There were odd things happening as far back as I can remember, but only openly discussed as a family starting at around 1970. Sometimes we would get a little spooked, but we were mostly just curious. However, the following is one of the most unsettling events that happened to me. I was 16 in 1977 and had my driving license. Back then, you could have full driving privileges the very day you turned 16. Well, I often drove to school and back, and sometimes with my brothers, but on this one particular day, I drove home from school alone. Seeing no other car as I arrived home, I thought no one else was there. I went in through the kitchen, unlocking the door, and placed my backpack and keys on the kitchen table. And as I did this, I heard footsteps. It sounded like they were at least 2 rooms away at the back of the house. Well, I was a little surprised. I opened the door leading into the bedroom next to the kitchen and called out that I was home. As I continued through the bedroom and into the next, I called out again, and I wondered why nobody answered and why whoever it had not parked in front. My 2 older brothers also drove, and sometimes there could be as many as 5 cars at our house. Because of that, we had extra parking space in the back of the house near the barn, and I thought someone must have been parked in back, and that's why I didn't see the car. as I walked into the third room, which was the bedroom at the opposite end of the house from the kitchen, I glanced out the window and saw the extra parking spaces were empty. And that's when I started feeling uneasy. I fell silent and I softened my steps. I walked quickly and quietly through the bathroom and into the next bedroom, listening and glancing out windows, looking for cars to help me identify who was in the house with me. But there were no cars, and I realized the footsteps were not from my family. I began to feel fear, and my mind was scrambling to understand just what was going on. I thought it had to be an intruder, and the intruder must have heard me. I thought maybe they would run out the kitchen door, which I had left open, and the footsteps, however, continued at that same steady pace, not slowing up or speeding up to indicate my presence bothered them. They made a big circle around the entire house, with me just a room or two behind. I never saw anyone or even a shadow of anyone, but I just heard the footsteps clearly. And as I passed through the last bedroom and approached the living room, I heard the footsteps pass through the kitchen and not go outside as I thought they would, but rather back around as if to make a second lap through our house. That didn't make any sense and really confused me. If it were someone wanting to harm me, they could have done that by now. If it were someone trying to rob us, they had a chance to run away and didn't take it. And that's when I began to realize that it was not a person, but instead, it was the family ghost. I had heard the phantom footsteps before, but never for this long, and never when I was alone. And because I was alone, I was extraordinarily creeped out by it. By the time I came full circle once again in the kitchen, I had made up my mind. Without breaking stride, I passed the table, grabbed my bag and keys, walked out of the house, locking the door behind me, and left. I was too frightened to look back. I went into town and waited until I knew someone else would be home before returning. Well, I told my family what had happened, and they all believed me, because we all had experienced strange things over the years, and most of us had heard the mysterious footsteps at least once. That somehow made it better, but still, I avoided being home alone after that. I hope you enjoyed that story, and I wish you all a happy Halloween.
Wow.
Isn't that just creepy?
Yeah. You know, when you're not expecting somebody to be home and you hear these things,
yeah,
you know, it's really disturbing.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And, you know, and I don't mean to sound sexist here, but I mean, obviously, women seem to have a lot more to worry about than men in most cases like this. You know, unfortunately, women are targeted quite a bit for, you know, heinous acts and granted, they should feel more cautious in those kind of situations. But my God, I don't think it matters if you're man or woman in a situation like that. Just that idea that somebody else is in that house.
Yeah.
And they're pacing you through your own house.
Your house. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't catch up on them. You're not seeing any indication of someone being there, but you continually hear the very plain as day sound of footsteps.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it sounds intelligent. So here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. There are two major types of hauntings, one of which is an intelligent haunting, and the other one is a residual haunting. And a residual haunting, I know I've covered this before, but forgive the redundancy, but we get new listeners all the time. A residual haunting is kind of like just a recorded event that repeats. And while these footsteps could be residual, the fact that it remained ahead of her no matter where she was,
right,
is, to me, seems intelligent. Like it was moving away from her continuously.
Trying to stay away.
Yeah. Right. Based upon where she was, it was staying just ahead of her and just out of sight. And that, to me, really seems to indicate at least some kind of intelligence at work there. Mm. You know what I mean, Don?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really... Yeah, if she had a chance to catch up to it, if it, you know, paused or, you know, turned around and went the other way, or even just the noise began on the other side of her, mm-hmm. you know, then it would more, I would think it would be more a residual thing because it's following that same pattern, you know. So I don't think, yeah, I think you're right. I think it was cognizant of where she was, where it was, and it did not want to be discovered in any more fashion than being heard.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah. It just wanted to be heard. It just wanted to be ahead. And it seems to, you know, have done that for the specific reason, and I'm just speculating here, but to intimidate. The fact that they all had so many experiences with this ghost through the years, it seems odd that it would suddenly want to be spooky and creepy. And maybe it was always trying to be spooky and creepy, but just the fact that they had all kind of become used to it.
Right.
But to pull out this one instance and just be absolutely wacky, it's pretty bizarre.
Now, she said she was 16 because she had just gotten her driver's license, right?
Yeah.
So why hadn't she heard it before, or was she just not?
Well, she said that she had.
Oh.
She just never heard it this long. Oh. Like, they would hear these random footsteps here and there. That
says more towards the intelligence part.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they would hear these ghostly footsteps here and there from time to time, but they didn't seem to have any, you know, pattern to them other than that they occurred. But this time, it was like they kept ahead of her and on a specific pattern based upon position. You know, so it's a very intelligent type of activity, I think. I really do. So it doesn't sound like, you know, for the most part, Sharon, that your experiences were really horrible. It just sounds like something was present and seems to have wanted you to know that it was present. But I think it's incredibly profound, and it seems to indicate that there's probably someone that's been there for an awful long time, probably before you guys were there, and has chosen to stay, or had chosen to stay. I don't believe you're probably there anymore. I got to commend you to walk two laps through your house following ghost footsteps. That's pretty brave.
That's brave. That is brave.
I think I would have made it about half the house and called it a day. That's it. I'm going to the store.
Wow.
Yeah, but she stuck it out. She stuck it out until she made that next lap to grab her keys and stuff, and then went, nope, and got out of there.
Well, you know, they say if you have something following you or something, you know, intimidating you,
mm-hmm.
don't run. just be calm as a cucumber.
Right.
Gather your stuff. And that's exactly what she did. She just walked in there, you know, made the second circuit, walked in, grabbed her stuff, and walked right out the door.
Yeah. Well, she didn't run. That's true. I got to give her credit for that, too. I mean, really, it's amazing how bold and brave some people are.
I'd be like, zoinks!
Yeah, exactly. I would have gone full Scooby-Doo and Shaggy on that deal. Yeah.
Wow.
But no, it's a great story.
Yeah.
It really is. And it really does identify. It's tough to pull it out. If it wasn't for the following thing, I would say that most of the activity there is residual. Most of it sounds like it just happens without knowing too much of the other activity going on in that house. But again, I suspect that house has some history and there's a presence there, and it just wants to be recognized every once in a while. But that sounds like a really interesting house, too. There's not even a hallway in the whole place.
Wow, yeah, I was kind of amazed at that.
Yeah, I wonder why. Yeah. I don't think I'm conceptualizing it as I'm reading it, trying to figure out, well, what does this look like? You know, and it just sounds like a bunch of rooms with doors between them, and that's it. Yeah. But what a unique layout. I don't know. I've never heard of that before.
Wow.
Every time I picture a house, it always has a hallway.
At least to the bedrooms, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You got like the living room, kitchen, maybe a laundry room in the front end or something like that. And then you've got a hallway and then the rest of the stuff, the bathroom and the bedrooms.
Right.
But it sounds really interesting, very cool. And I really appreciate you sending that in. Thank you so much.
That's because awesome.
We thrive on stuff like that here on the portal. That's our bread and butter. And it's your guys's involvement that has made this show amazing. It truly is. You guys have brought so much to the table, as you, all you listeners out there. You guys have brought your experiences, you brought your thoughts, you've brought your, you know, your ideas to the table. And I tell you what, I'll say it again. I've already said it many times, but I have learned more about the paranormal by far by listening to the things you guys talk about in your experiences than I have from anywhere else. And I've learned a great deal from other places, don't get me wrong. But it's the nuances that you guys talk about. It's the way you see things that really makes it unique. And every time somebody sends me a story, it feels like I get another piece of that puzzle. You know what I mean, Don?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the sense of community. You feel that you're safe, you know, sharing these things, and we appreciate that too. Yeah. You know, we're a paranormal safe spot. And really honored that you've shared that with us, and we do hope that you send us more.
Yeah, exactly. If there's more of those encounters and stuff, Sharon, please.
Oh yeah,
we'd love to hear more, because that's great fodder for the listeners. I know I love those kind of stories, and I'm excited to hear more if you've got more, or any of you all. That goes for any of you guys out there. Please email in your stories. That's the stuff that makes these shows great. But anyway, I think we're going to go to a break here quick, Don, and then we'll continue on with our interview with Chad. All right. Don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back. If I can find the button. All right. Everybody, thanks so much for being here on the show tonight and being a part of the Paranormal Portal family. I got a great guest lined up for you tonight. Joining us now is Chad from Atlanta, who's going to go through his journey and share some incredible encounters and experiences. So first of all, Chad, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you inviting me on.
Oh man, it's totally my pleasure. In fact, this is truly the part of doing all the shows that we do that I enjoy the most, is just getting an opportunity to talk with people and to look through their eyes and to see things through their experiences. And I'm really sincerely honest when I say that I probably have learned more about the paranormal by listening to people's experiences than I ever have from doing research on my own.
Yeah, I appreciate the forum. You know, I tell my story and a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy. So there's not a lot of people out there that actually will believe me. There's a lot of skeptics out there. So,
well, you're our kind of crazy, brother. So we're glad you're here. So, but why don't you start us out with, how did this journey begin for you?
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is in Berks County. And it is probably one of the most haunted places in the United States. There's several books that have been written called Ghost Stories of Berks County that document a lot of hauntings in that area. The house I grew up in was haunted, just doors opening and closing by themselves in a pattern. It seemed like not a sentient, but a residual haunting. Mm-hmm. The attic had a real creepy feel to it. I never liked going up in the attic as a kid. My first solid experience after that was actually not even a ghost. It was, I believe, a Sasquatch.
Oh, wow.
I was about 14, and we were in Antietam, Pennsylvania. And it's a lot of battles have been fought there. It was a home of the Hessians for a while. My stepbrother's grandmother owned a house that used to be a rod and gun club, and we had dinner there on a Sunday night, and it was in the fall, I believe. I think it was October time frame.
Okay.
Because it was only about 7:30, and it was already really dark. So after dinner, my stepbrother and I decided to go walk the trails of the rod and gun club. So as we're heading down the trail towards a pond, I heard a noise behind me, and I kind of got a shiver up my spine and hairs were standing up on the back of my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned around and it was hard to make out. It was really dark and it's probably about 6.5 to 7 foot tall, full dark hair that blended into the night. But the thing I remember most are the eyes. They were glowing red eyes. And I don't know if they're giving off light of their own, but there was no, I didn't have a flashlight, so it wasn't eye shine.
Oh, okay.
But they were wide, like I surprised it. And I know I was listening to one of your other episodes the other night, and Stephen, you were talking to about the hairy man in Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of reminded me that, you know, a lot of times you surprise them or they mess up and they get caught.
Right.
And I think it was trying to sneak behind us to get to the pond,
mm-hmm.
and it stepped on a twig or something, but I caught it by surprise because its eyes were like wide. It reminded me of the Patterson Gimlin film Sasquatch, okay. that kind of shape.
Okay.
It was really large and I could see fangs almost like incisors.
Wow. Okay.
And it was maybe a 3 second glance. I turned around to grab my stepbrother and say, "Hey, guess what?" And I turned back around and it was gone. No noise, no nothing, just gone. I headed back up to the house and he followed me because I was running. And we get back to the house. I told everybody what I saw and nobody, of course, believed me being 13. They said it was just a figment of my imagination. But after that, I never went outside at dark again up there.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Wow.
So that one was really interesting. And that was my first real experience with anything like that. I guess I was probably, for my next experience, I think I was 18. I just came home from boot camp for the Navy, and we had moved to Arizona earlier that year. And it was springtime. It was probably about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and it was, again, at night, dark. I was relaxing in my parents' hot tub in the yard. I was looking up at the sky, and 3 balls of light shot over my head.
Ooh.
And they were probably about 70 to 80 feet above the house, and they stopped. And when they went over my head at the height they were at, they were about the size of a softball in comparison.
Okay.
When they stopped, they looked to be the size of a golf ball.
Oh.
And then they shot back over me and kind of hovered just above me for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started heading back away from me and stopped and shot one by one straight up into the air and disappeared.
Man. So you're seeing these as most likely some kind of physical structure, not just an orb of light or something, right?
Right. It seemed like there was something. It wasn't an orb. It wasn't spiritual. It looked to be more UFO-like. It was a glowing globe. And I know Phoenix is known for sightings with the triangle-shaped UFO that was sighted there.
Sure.
Several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was, we were not far, I think 40 miles from Luke Air Force Base. So, you know, there was a lot of sightings in that area around that time frame.
Right. Yeah.
So that was a real interesting night. You know, it's something I always like to remember and recount to people. And that one, I get a lot more people believing me than the Sasquatch story. So
isn't that funny that there's a distinction there between different phenomena that for many people would seem impossible, but there's such a discernment between which one people are willing to accept.
Exactly. It's amazing. I've seen stuff on the ship in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that just a lot of people accept, but other people are telling me I'm crazy. So,
wow.
It's, you know, I've seen flight footage of unexplained glowing objects, all sorts of crazy stuff, radio calls of, we're not sure what it is. You just see glowing mists in the middle of the ocean, almost like the Northern Lights, but you're around the equator. So it's really interesting having seen all that and being, you know, attuned to the spiritual world and, mm-hmm. and knowing that we're not the only ones out there. So
that's really powerful stuff. And you know, I imagine being out there on the ocean, you guys on a ship are probably the most interesting thing going on out there. So it doesn't surprise me that they would, you know, they wouldn't keep coming checking you guys out.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty neat. I spent about a year at sea. So the most we saw were, like I said, some of the videos from the flight footage of the pilot seeing UFOs.
Oh, the Tic Tacs. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the glowing mists, those were always neat. Sometimes you'd see trails following the ship that were glowing in the water. And I don't know if it was just like an algae that was,
like a bioluminescence
or what, but there'd always like at night, there'd be a trail following us. So that was always cool to see.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet you that would be just incredible to witness in person.
Yeah, it was. And to be, you know, just out of high school and that young and seeing and experiencing that, it really kind of sets the tone for the rest of your life that I want to know more. I want to see more. I want to know where this is all coming from. Mm-hmm. I think that's what led me into paganism and, you know, seeing the different spiritual paths there are.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
So, one of the other things I saw, I was in my 20s, and it was after I was married. My wife and I moved to her hometown in Georgia, and we lived out near Atlanta Motor Speedway. Okay. And the speedway is right along Georgia Highway 20. Mm-hmm. And on one side of Highway 20 were fields. It was owned by, a farmer. It was all farmland and pastures, but he never kept any livestock on it or grew anything on it. He charged $10 for people to park during events at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Oh, okay.
So we were driving. It was probably around this time of year, around the 31st. And I believe we were headed to a party. I'm not sure where we were going, but it was dark and it was at night. And right before you get to Atlanta Motor Speedway, there's this old decrepit house sitting back in the woods, and it kind of reminds you of the house from Blair Witch Project. It's real creepy. Uh-huh. I've never seen anything back there, but the feeling you get from it is kind of odd.
Sure.
So we had just passed that house, and I was kind of glazing off into the fields, and my wife was driving, and there was a mist rising up out of the fields that the guy let people park on. And as I was glancing at it, I start seeing figures in the mist, and I see they have muskets and they're wearing Civil War uniforms.
Oh, man.
I'm watching this whole Civil War battle play out as my wife's driving, and they're all mist. It wasn't solid, so I don't think it was a time loop or thing. It just seemed like it was like a residual haunting of this entire Civil War battle playing out. And I glanced over to my wife, and I could see the hairs on her arm standing up. And she felt something, but I asked her to look over to her right.
Mm-hmm.
By the time she looked over and I looked back, there was no mist, no anything. Everything was gone, and it was just the fields.
Wow. That's really incredible. So do you think that it was perhaps as much a psychic event as anything? Because you know, as a manifestation goes, as soon as you glanced over and then glanced back, it's gone. Not even a trailing anomaly from what you're describing. So do you think that you were maybe seeing it as much psychically as anything?
That's probably a good possibility. I've always attracted stuff like that.
Sure.
When I lived in California with the Navy, one of my friends, she was the one that started teaching me about paganism and witchcraft. And every time we were at her house, I'd hear buzzing in my ears. Mm-hmm. And she said, they really like you, don't they? So I'd always get visits at her house. So I think I'm a little more attuned than most people.
Right, right.
So that it's very good possibility that only I was the one who could see what was going on in that field.
Yeah, I think, but that's still very powerful. I mean, I don't mean to discount or to remove any of the phenomenal nature of it, but it just seems really curious to me. And you hear that coming up in the paranormal all the time. I was looking at this apparition, and then we were locked in eyes, and then suddenly my distraction was altered for a minute, and as soon as I look back, it's gone. And that seems like such a common thread in people's spiritual experiences.
Yeah, and that wasn't the only time it's happened. We've been driving through at night on back roads, and I'd see a hitchhiker on the side, but they were ghostly. It wasn't an actual person there because I could see the stop sign or the road sign behind them, through them. And my wife wouldn't see it, but I would. And I'd be like, oh my God, did you see that? And she's like, no. So I think once or twice maybe she's seen something, but I've seen it several times on the back roads here in Georgia.
Oh yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me too much that you would be just tuned to that. And maybe it's by virtue of growing up around it, maybe that somehow just turned that ability on in you. And, cause I think that people, after they experience something, especially at a younger age, they just seem to be just tuned to it, for lack of a better term. And, it sounds like you were able to maintain that through your life.
Yeah, and it comes and goes. The house we're in now, it just happened the other week. I walked into our bedroom, and we have a cat, and she was laying in the doorway from the master bath to the master bedroom, and over under my nightstand was another cat, and we don't own another cat. My wife's seen her. My son has seen her. Aww. So we know that we have the spirit of a cat living with us. And my wife keeps telling me, and this one I haven't seen, but I have no reason to doubt my wife. She actually moved all our recliners out of our family room into our living room, because sitting in her recliner, she'd watch a shadow person come out of the woods towards our garage and then start heading towards the steps and try and get into the house.
Oh, geez. Oh, so, man. So she just opted to move the chair so she wouldn't see that anymore?
Right, because she knows it can't get past. I put a circle around the house. I got a salt circle protecting the house.
Sure.
And we regularly burn sage and smudge the house and keep the negativity out. And I've got a old antique key above the doorways to keep out any negativity. So it's not getting in the house, but...
Oh, that's
she
excellent.
Just got tired of seeing it try to get into the house.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's cool that it's not in the house, but it's got to be unnerving to know that it's trying. And, I'm sure they've got nothing but time, so it's going to continue to try and try and try and try.
Right. And like I said, she's only seen it when nobody's home, when it's her by herself.
Oh.
But I have no doubt that she sees it.
Yeah, right.
Like I said. But it's never attempted anything when I'm at the house.
Oh, okay.
Or at least not to my knowledge.
And that's another thing that seems to come up. And I'm not trying to sound at all sexist, ladies and gentlemen, but there does seem to be a difference in our energies with things like this, that in a lot of cases, the last person to experience aggressive hauntings will be the primary male character in a home. And, whether that's a father or the eldest male adult, they seem to be the last to become aware of it. And I don't know, perhaps it's a difference in our energies or what, I don't know. But that is a theme. That they most often will, reveal themselves to females or children first, and then, work up finally to the most adult male around. Do you recognize that too, or have you ever?
I think the women tend to have been stronger that I've grown up with.
Right. Okay.
They always seem to be stronger psychically.
Okay.
And I think that's because of, just the female gender and the ability to grow another human being inside them.
Yep.
I think they have to be the stronger sex. I have no doubt about that, because I couldn't see pushing something out of me like that.
Right. And I want to qualify that I'm certainly, really, honestly, I'm not a sexist person or anything, but in the years and years of researching this, there does seem to be a pattern to that. And I don't understand what it means. Perhaps the males are just not quite as sensitive and aren't able to pick it up as quickly as the females, because I agree with you that, there's a real strength in women that men can only dream about having.
Right. And this, I think it may just be the fact that, With this shadow figure, I just think it may be just scared of me because of, I've got more experience and more time in practicing paganism than my wife does. So I started getting interested in it in high school.
Okay.
When we lived in Arizona, a lot of my friends were involved in it. And really, I was just playing around, which was probably the worst thing you could do with any of that, just, not knowing what was going on. And she recently just really started getting involved to it. And she's more into the herbal, side of it, what we call a kitchen witch.
Right.
She likes, she does, sigils and likes doing stuff with herbs and incense, where I do more spiritual and magic work.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
which I guess in your situation probably strikes up a really cool balance between the two approaches.
Yeah, it could be, but we don't practice together. We have two different belief systems. So, not to discredit anything she does, it's just not my style, and she doesn't do the rituals and stuff. She's more of a practical type of witch.
Okay.
So she's more hands-on and physical, and she won't come with me at midnight and cast a circle under the full moon. Whereas I won't join her while she's in the kitchen whipping up, a potion or anything. So,
right. Very cool. Wow. And what I meant, I guess, was that just not that you guys practice together, but just that balance of energies between you, that you have a, different approaches to what you're doing.
Oh, definitely. We have a good energy between us. I mean, I hope so. We've been married for 26 years now. So, there is definitely energy between us, and we've done some stuff together, and I think it's worked better. She's amazing with sigils, I'll tell you that. So done some really cool work with those. But I think, you're right. The difference between the males and the females is very, very strong.
Yeah.
So
in a complimentary way. Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
But no, I think that's amazing. So you guys have had activity pretty much wherever you are, is what it sounds like, huh?
Oh, yes. We've owned two houses since we've been together, and both of them have had some sort of activity going on in them. So I've been in active areas pretty much all my life. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think Phoenix, when we lived in Phoenix, Arizona, the only thing really there were the UFOs. I don't remember too much of any spiritual or anything, but that may have been just me pushing it away at the time, because I was raised Catholic.
Okay.
And I was very involved in the church at that point.
Oh, I see.
So more because of my parents,
right,
pushing. And it shortly thereafter, like right before I went into the Navy, is kind of when I started dabbling in paganism.
Okay. Now, you talk about Arizona and such. Had you ever gone to check out the Sedona area and some of the portals that are discussed in there?
I've been to Sedona three or four times in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was always when I was, you know, a teenager with my parents.
Okay.
And we never really looked at it that way.
Sure.
We heard a lot of the stories coming from the Superstition Mountains, mm-hmm. especially since they were so close to us, being in Mesa versus Phoenix. The Superstition Mountains were probably about an hour and a half away. And there was a lot of stories that came out of there, but I don't remember them all, and a lot of them were First Nation stories. So they're not very open, as you know, about communicating their stories.
Right, so. Right. Yeah. It's just very interesting, and something that's always really intrigued me was those stories coming out of that area, and I've often wondered what it is geographically about that area that makes it such a hot spot for that, if it has to do with just the ley lines converging in that spot or what it is. But yeah, there's a lot of amazing things coming out of there, apparently.
Yeah, there always was. There was that, and heard a lot about, I don't know if you'd call it a time warp or a time slip, mm-hmm. but people gaining or losing minutes in that area that I always found interesting. Yeah. I actually had that happen to me one night. I was helping friends out with a paper route.
Okay.
And we were, and this was in California again, when we were in Kings County near the Sequoia National Forest.
Okay.
It was a lot of farming community near Fresno and all that. And it was a really long route that we had to drive. It wasn't one of these paper routes where you could just ride your bike and toss the newspaper. These were all farmlands, and the driveways were really long. Uh-huh. And, you know, you're doing this route at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And the one night, I guess it was about 4:10, I had looked at my clock and it was like 4:10. And I was getting towards the end of the route. I still had another 30 or 40 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. And we tossed some papers, and I know it had been about 30 minutes because I glanced at the clock and it was like 4:30. And I threw the last paper, and I knew it should be about 4:45. And I looked at my clock and it was 4:20.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was odd. I got home and they couldn't believe I was home so early.
Yeah.
So I got home probably about 30 minutes early. And they're like, "Do you miss anything?" I said, "No, all the papers are gone." So
that's incredible. Yeah, they probably thought you just threw them in a pile somewhere. Just right. Get done early. Oh, that's great. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Paranormal Portal. And we hope you enjoyed this journey. Thank you so much to everybody for all your kind words again. Please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranormal Portal Radio. Follow us on YouTube, and you can see us doing the shows live 7 days a week, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or watch our back library on there. And you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/Paranormal Portal. And we are also on Twitter at Paranormal Portal. All right, guys, we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other and help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Good night, everybody.
betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.